Nelly. Woo, Nelly. That's right. We're here. We're back with another episode of Unfixed, and we're here with the late Chad Keaveney.
I'm still around. Yes. I made it.
No, you're the late Chad Keaveney. And so, Chad, thank you for coming in and co-hosting Unfixed tonight.
Well, I'm trying to replace Toby, but I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, well, you know, you're trying to replace Andy.
Oh, well, I think I can do that.
So here we are. It is...
I turned up, didn't I?
You did, eventually. Better late than never. The late Chad Keaveney, everybody. Straight direct from... you came in from...
From Leafany, from West County Sligo this evening.
West County Sligo. And boy, are we happy to hear your voice, to have you on the show. And we've got a hell of a show for you tonight. We have the pan-continental artist, Chad. We've got Varvara Shavrova.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. It already is exciting. I'm chomping at the bit, buddy. So I'm looking forward to that. We got a lot of stuff coming up in the show today. Chad, you pulled in like right at the end. Like we had to change the time, the start time, because you took a train, which is pretty European.
Yeah. I like trains. They're good for getting work done. They're kind of like being in a very long lift.
Uh-huh.
And it's
or is, I never thought about it like that, but that's a valid point. And
yeah,
true.
You know, the doors close and they open and you're in the same physical box, but you've arrived in a new destination.
You've moved. That's true. Yeah. There's a great deal in common with elevators, except for the Y and Z access, or Y and X access, rather.
Well, there's also the conversations that happen in trains. So I did have an ex American,
like an expat.
He was in the Air Force, and he was talking about how he was selling arms to the to the Iraqis and the Iranians during the Iraqi-Iranian War.
So just to make this clear, you met an American arms dealer on the train from Sligo to here in Dublin, and now you're here with us.
Oh, no, I know this is the problem with the train. I didn't meet him. He was sitting behind me, and I got the pleasure of having all of his conversation. So he was telling me, he was telling everybody about this, and then he complained about Obama because Obama cut pensions to retired vets.
Okay.
So that was, he said he'd never vote for a Democrat because of that.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. Yeah. So dude on the train is voting for the right from now on. And God bless them. God bless those country boys and their arms dealing and their, you know, effing Democrats. I'm trying to sell some good old American arms to some good old goddamn Iraqis. And what happens? This Muslim president cuts my pension.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm voting for the Trumps of the future. Chad, could you do me a favor? And for me, read the list
of what's
going to happen.
Okay, of course, this is the standard list. We're going to have news from the Southeast.
Okay, so this is the Southeast Ireland update. This is when we bring you the latest and most immediate and critical news you need to know from the sunny Southeast Ireland. And yeah, we get you up to date. I know you're a bit behind because you were in the Northwest.
Oh yeah!
But now that you're here, we can update you to the Southeast.
Oh yeah! So I bring some news from Sligo.
Oh no, kidding! Okay, save it for as a footnote. Okay, and then what else can the listener? What segments are we going to burn through today?
Oh, cool. Of course, the publisher. He's left another message.
Yeah, I've got a voicemail from my wacky, quirky, nervous in the service publisher. I have it locked and loaded. Like your American friend has his illicit arm steals. And what else we got?
Not my friend. Okay. Fellow passenger.
You overheard it. You became obsessed with him, and
we have the scary news, of course.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, well, and then, of course, there's going for a walk.
Okay, yeah, we went for a walk, and you were just pre-show, you were like, Adam, where did you go for a walk? We went for a walk in Donostia, in the Basque country. Some call it San Sebastian. The Spanish would, but the Basque separatists call it Donostia. And I talked to a protester who was protesting Basque prisoners.
To keep them or
no,
to have
set
them
free?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Have them released into Spanish Basque country or French
to
Basque?
Bring them to prisons in Basque country, within Basque country. Okay. The thing that they're protesting is the idea that they're being held in prisons outside of the Basque country. And we'll get on to that.
Yeah, I know they found out. Well, that was a long time ago about how the Spanish were torturing the Basques.
Oh,
because they
thumbs down.
Yeah, well, they arrested and imprisoned a French French undercover officer. Uh-huh. And they tortured him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's always good for a yuck. Okay. And what else? Anything else that we haven't touched on here?
Well, of course, there is the shower talk with always.
Shower talk with Toby Hallam, hopefully, all the way from the U.S. He is in Manchester, which is in, as you know, Massachusetts.
Oh,
yeah.
Manchester, so, Massachusetts.
Yeah, so we're hopefully going to give him a call, and anything else we can look forward to, Chad?
Well, of course, there's 90 Seconds with Andrea Lorien.
Correct. That is correct. It is Andrea Lorien. And we're going to call Andrea, and we're going to have her live on the air here on Unfixed, just like the old days. I'm looking forward to it. I'm pumped, and I think we should just wade into things. Now, Chad, you know what? You're here. You're guest hosting, and I very much appreciate your presence, as I've made you aware. But if anything you want, other than we can't do shower talk or Andrea Lorien off the cusp, because they kind of have times.
Who is
the guest on the show tonight, Jack?
Did we not introduce her at the beginning?
I mentioned it, but
yeah,
who
but
is the guest?
It's Varvara Shavarova.
She told me, okay, when we were doing level checks and stuff, she told me that she was going to develop this like poker device that she was going to put under the abandoned bar here, and that she was going to prick me in the C word anytime that I said Varvara.
Okay,
and I have to say Varvara, or else I'm going to get poked in the balls with a Russian little mini spear, Chad,
a
marshmallow toaster.
Oh yeah, well, but and as well as that, we should probably plug her exhibition.
Yeah, what's she doing right now? It's up in Mayo, correct?
Yeah, it's in Ballycastle.
It's called Earth and Fire. What is it called?
Land and Sea.
Land and Sea. Earth, Water and Fire. Land and Sea. Varvara Shavarova. It's an ink on canvas, or what is she up to?
It's, they're graphite on paper, but okay. The graphite now. How exactly she's worked that into the paper, because these are really 3D drawings.
Yeah, I got a preview via video chat a little while ago, and I was pretty psyched. I was also in the middle of the goddamn city. It was really loud. Couldn't find my headphones, and it was a bit of a mess. Chad, here's your three options. We can listen to what my publisher, I'm trying to publish a book.
Yeah.
And I have a voicemail saved from my publisher, and I play them on the air for the listeners. I save them. I never talk to the guy. I save the voicemails.
This is going to end up in an audio book.
Well, it already has, for devotees will note that it already is in the format of a multimedia audiobook with a little hand that comes out and manually turns the pages for you. Sure. But we've been having a lot of problems.
Where's
with the
second hand?
We've been having a lot of problems with the book. But yeah, the second hand. It's on the clock, Chad. So any preference? We can go for a walk. We can do the Southeast Ireland update, or we can hear the voicemail from the publisher.
Let's start with the Southeast Ireland update.
Okay, could you please, Chad? Can I ask you a favor? Could you please hand me that newspaper right there, ladies and gentlemen? In my hands, I have the latest issue of today we're going with the Wicklow people. It would appear, and we're going to we're going to bring you up to speed. We're going to DJ this thing on, right? Ladies, party people, everybody who's been in the Northwest who needs to know about the Southeast, we're going to bring you up to speed right now. We are going to tell you about what's going on in the Southeast of Ireland. And here's the headline, Chad. Are you ready for this?
I am ready.
Find after row over fish sale on Main Street. Okay? That is concise writing right there. Because you have to break that sentence down in your head after you hear it, right?
Find
after row over fish sale on Main Street, right?
Okay. Okay. Is it legal to sell fish on the Main Street?
Well, we'll get right into that,
there
right?
There are some strange laws in Ireland.
So man refused to leave area when directed. An Arklow man who entered the dispute with the Garda in relation to the sale of a fish on Arklow's Main Street has been convicted of two public order offenses. James Higgins, with an address, and I'm not telling you his address, that's terrible, was charged with failure to comply with Garda direction and threatening, abusive, and insulting behavior on Main Street, Arklow, on November 14th, 2016. The Garda, Kevin Fitzpatrick, gave evidence at Arklow District Court on the day in question that he was on foot patrol in the area and he approached two men who were selling fish on the footpath outside of some cafe. He said that Higgins told him that he was not the seller, but that he was supervising the younger man, a juvenile. So can you picture this, right? There's this guy and his kids go to fish, and the fish is the kid is negotiating a selling price for this one fish he's caught. Okay,
Okay, and it's a single fish.
Yes. And the guard rolls up, right? And he's like, no, no, no. The Fitzpatrick told the court the youth said that he did not have a casual trading license. And that when he was in the process of advising him on this, Higgins interrupted. Okay, can you not go and do your job? There are burglaries happening all over this town. Can you say this in your best Arklow accent, or however you think Arklow people talk?
Oh no! Wow. Okay. Okay. Try. Okay. Give me the sentence.
Your line is: Can you not go? Wait. Hold on. Can you not go and do your job? There are burglaries happening all over the town, and why are you bothering us?
Can you not do your job? Can you not your
do voice your didn't change no, at all?
Jack, but town would be the word.
Okay, yeah, okay.
That has to change.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, no, yeah, no. All right, so the guard had directed Higgins to leave the area, but he failed to do so. Okay, now Higgins responded with, you can go and fuck yourself. Why don't you take the fucking fish down to River Chapel? I hear it's lovely this time of year. Now, this man's mentioning River Chapel. Why?
Wait, this is the guard who said
no, this? No, this is the old man. You can go and fuck yourself. Why don't you take the fucking fish down to River Chapel? I hear it's lovely this time of year. Now, why is this man talking about River Chapel?
River Chapel, is that somewhere where the guards
that's
go?
That's where the guard lives, Chad.
Oh,
ooh.
My God.
So he called the guard out on where he lives. And, he said he wouldn't go until the young lad was ready to go. Ashlyn Kelly, his solicitor, probed the possibility of a hostile relationship between the guarda and her client, okay, stemming back from involvement in water protests the previous year. It goes on and on.
Water protests and now a fish?
I know, really. He's involved in aquatic legal disputes. It has nothing to do with the fish, but was born out of a personal dislike for Mr. Higgins. The guard denied
this. Underage children.
He denied this. He'd pulled up the patrol car on the date to see if his colleague needed assistance, and another cop rolled up. And this is a lot easier than people are making out to be. The defendant was asked to leave by the guardian. He refused. That's the end of it. Fines totaling €1,000 were imposed upon the accused, Chad.
No, but the question...
That is it. That is everything.
Was the fish sold?
I don't know. This is not... I only have my source material. This is the Wicklow people. And that's that. All right, so that was the Southeast Ireland update. All the news that's fit to know out of the Southeast of Ireland. Before the show, Chad, you had mentioned that you had picked up on a tiny bit of interesting, potentially interesting information out of the Northwest.
Oh, yes. And Sligo News Online.
Wow, and that immediately intrigued me in that. It's like, you know, if we could balance it out, Southeast Ireland, Northwest Ireland, we could maybe make this kind of like satellite, like double moons, you know, like with Dublin being the sun, we'd have two alternating moons going around, and we'd have tides that kind of acted like waves. I would finally get laid. I would never run out of shampoo. All of it would happen.
And you know what's going on with the cattle around the country.
Yeah, and you've got a story to bring for us, and this is out of the Northwest. Now, what's the title of the publication?
This is from Sligo News Online.
Right.
So, Joe Ferguson, 52, has been arrested by Gardaí for wearing a balaclava and entering a pub in Sligo town. The incident occurred at about 10:45 p.m., when the masked man came into the premises, sat down at the bar, and had a substantial number of pints, according to an eyewitness account.
Substantial number of pints.
It's not known if he was carrying any weapon at the time. Joe, a self-employed...
His ex-girlfriend was like, he's always carrying a weapon. You know what I'm saying? Sorry.
Joe, a self-employed fisherman from Sligo town, left the pub at 11:45 and was arrested on Castle Street shortly after. He was brought to Sligo Garda Station and questioned. After which, Joe released a statement saying he was truly sorry if he scared anyone in the pub. And went on to say, it's because the wife, I wore a balaclava. She does deliveries around the town. If she's seen me walking around town on Tuesday night drinking pints, she would have went berserk.
Right, okay. So the man was so intently concerned with his wife not seeing him drinking alcohol that he put on a ski mask, a disguise, in order to go into the bar, drink by himself. But like, if his wife were to drive by, they would just see some guy in a balaclava.
She wouldn't have given it the light of day.
She wouldn't have copped him. All right, all right. Yeah, okay, so that's all the news you need to know out of the Northwest. Thank you so much, Chad, for bringing that down to us here in Dublin. Yeah, you know, it balances out this Southeast Northwest idea. I'm really happy about the parity that we've attempted to strike.
I think the constructive ideas that they're working on the Northwest could be exported to elsewhere.
Yeah, and before long, I can see this shaping up into a mini competition, and like which story is more shocking, emotionally relevant, potentially financially viable. My story is about a teenager selling a single fish he caught and the fact that the cop hated the guy's like caregiver. And yours is about a guy that like, you know, put on a ski mask so that his wife wouldn't be able to tell that it was him getting drunk midday.
Well, I can see a real, real new market for ski masks opening up.
Yeah, I think they should just have different people's faces printed on them, and so you just throw the balaclava on, and you would just kind of like look like, you know, Damo, and go down to the bar. This was the Northwest Ireland update, and all right, I need to hear. I'm attempting to publish a book, and I always want to know what my publisher is about to tell me, and I cannot just pretend that I'm not sitting on this thing, fingers trembling. I need to know what the publisher has told me. My publisher,
the best part of the show.
This is my publisher, my nervous publisher. He sends me he leaves me voicemails because I ignore his calls on purpose, and then I play them for the listeners. And here is the latest voicemail. I've not heard this about what's going on with me and the book that I published. It's been a whole problem. Some of them went out in like faux book form. They were plastic books. You couldn't open them, and it's just been a mess. And so here is, ladies and gentlemen, My wacky and quirky nervous publisher here on Unfix with Chad Keaveney and Vivara Shavrova. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to the show. And here, check out the publisher here on Unfixed.
Adam! Well, this is your publisher, Adam. How you doing there? I have some important updates about your book, Adam. You were being sued by a number of entities there. The multimedia version of your book has shocked people and it has burned people. Okay, your book has exploded and it has melted. Yeah. One man was sexually assaulted by the mechanical hand. Apparently he was reading with the book on his stomach, and the hand reached back and grabbed him, and now he suffers from what the doctors called bloody ripped penis there. We have two cases of blindness, both nearsighted women, where the hand went for the eyeballs there. A few people report uncontrollable vomiting. One guy reports bonding so closely with books that he begins to take on the qualities of the book. And so now he's reporting hemorrhagic diarrhea, Adam. Now, some of this is clearly my fault for going with the new book printer there. But some of the more biological cases, Adam, I have to attribute to the text itself. So we're in this together, I'm saying, okay? I started a number of side businesses to lawyer up here. I started one of those cuddle parlors, you know, where you pay to just cuddle with someone. Except in this one, you don't just cuddle with women. You cuddle with men. What with men, Adam, too. Specifically with CEOs. It's designed to create a feeling of financial security. Because in this day and age, companies are like the surrogate parents for adults. There, they feed and clothe us, and so on and so forth. They don't burp or change us so much, though. But some of these CEOs will. It's called filling a need, Adam. Not many customers yet, but tomorrow I'm heading out to twirl a sign dressed as a beleaguered publisher there. Now, I've written a poem about our travails, Adam, because that's what they call expression. Yeah, it's called The Book. A poem. Here it is. The book whispers from the shelf there. Read me, it hollers silently in the mind. I take her to bed, caress her spine. The police do not come. Not this time, anyways. I spread her gently there and finger her pulpy innards. She's black and white, but shaded in subtlety. I turn her pages as she turns mine. The police do come now. They're flashing siren helmets. Well, it's just a mess now in there. Here. Wake up, publisher, they say. Adam is not on the phone. I look at the book, and it's blank pages in there. And I think, Adam! So I'll get back to you soon and let you know what we need to do, Adam. Have a good one.
To listen to your message again, press 1. To save it and move on.
Oh, boy. So, Chad, I'm being sued. The multimedia version of the book is apparently self-destructing.
Well, that's you know, it's just more people who want to hear more about you.
And sexual assaults with a mechanical hand, Chad. Apparently,
oh, yeah.
it groped a man.
It groped a man.
Oh, boy.
I think you should be charging extra for that.
Yeah.
Don't you have a what's the thing that the small boy didn't have in Arklow for selling the fish? A casual
trading license.
Yeah,
that's what you call a book that gives you a hand job. You call it a casual trade off.
Yeah, that it? Exactly.
Yeah, that's classy, Chad. I'm glad you're a part of the show. So, Chad, you know, you can have lots of fun in the world in general. And also, like, you can have fun in various places. And sometimes the best place to have fun is by going into the hot box. Okay? By going into a hot box.
A hot box, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, as we say here on Shower Talk, it is the most fun you can have in a hot box without risking a sexually transmitted disease. It is Shower Talk. Today's topic on Shower Talk, showers without borders. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to turn on the water right now. We're going to head into to the hot area. And it's not even
soapy.
A box. Yeah, get lather up, baby. Shower Talk. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Shower Talk, the show about talking about thinking about showering. I'm top down Adam Jensen because I start with a hair and like a dirty wall. You would never stop and start in the middle or at the bottom. You start at the top and let the dirty water flow down your body, and that is why they call me top down Adam Jensen. I'm here with the late Chad Keaveney. Chad, how do you shower typically? What's your go-to? How do you start when you go in? What's your first impulse?
It's always think, do I wet my hair or not? Am I going to wash my hair today or not?
So this is it. So you go in and you're like, is this a hair washing day or not, Paul?
Yeah, that's
are we going to market or kind of we're going to work in the field?
Hey, but where you come from in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
You never get days when it's freezing outside?
No, it's like, you know, it's 22 degrees Celsius 100% of the year.
The first time I lived in Krakow, we did have days of minus 20, and uh-huh. If you went outside with wet hair, it would just crack
crystal,
and fall
yeah,
off.
Yeah, yeah, crack and fall off. So I'm here with Chad. It cracked and fell off Keaveney. Chad, today the topic here on Shower Talk, the show about talking about showering, thinking about showering, how you thought about the shower later in the day. Today the topic, Chad, is showers without borders, okay?
Showers without borders,
and that means that you go into a room, like a bathroom, and I had this in multiple places. I had it in my dorm room in Trinity College, Trinity Hall in the dorms.
Yeah.
I was shocked the first time I saw it, Chad, shocked. I walked in and the bathroom kind of just slanted towards a drain, and then there's a shower head sticking out of the wall and this curtain. You just pull around you.
But you had a curtain.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a plastic curtain. I know, right?
That's just so American, puritanical. What do you want a curtain for?
This was in Milltown. This was in goddamn Dublin 6. What are you talking about? It's American. And
yeah, your desire to have more to cover.
I didn't put it there. Okay. So this is about the idea of showers without borders. The idea that you can go into a room, there's a drain in the floor, a shower head sticking out of the wall, but there's no difference between like where you stand to wash your hands, brush your teeth, Or well, pee even? Or even take a poo-poo, Chad.
But you know, even take a poo-poo. Oh, God. Now we're going over borders. Yeah, yeah. Right? We're crossing. Yeah. But you know what the term for this is? It's called a douche à l'italienne.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You have to start.
It's an Italian shower.
An Italian shower.
Yeah.
Okay. So here in the abandoned bar, which has kind of been refurbished, we have a new shower, and it has no border. So you go into the bathroom. You haven't been to the abandoned bar's toilet quite yet.
No.
But when you go in, the shower it's part of the floor, man. It's crazy. We have these glass wall doors that fold in, and there's magnetized clips that it just kind of sticks together. Yeah, there's a physical barrier, but there's not the border on the floor between the shower and the rest of the bathroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we were up at your cottage, up in Sligo area.
Yeah.
And I walked into the bathroom to take a shower and nothing. But you know what? I have to criticize the shower. There's no place to hang the towel, dude. Like, come on. Have you noticed this?
I had to
wrap it around the mirror or something. It was nuts.
I hang it on the
Are you erect peen? Admit it.
No, one of those 1970s things that you hide away all your products, basically.
Yeah, okay. And the 1970s things in which you hide away all your products. And right now, the guest here on Shower Talk with Any Luck is Toby Crotchfirst Hallam. We're going to bring him in. We're going to bring him in right now. Toby, can you hear us? Toby Hallam.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome. Chad, can you hear Toby?
Toby, can you say something again?
Yeah, I'm Chad. Hello.
Right.
Okay.
So Toby here. Well, thank you for being the co-host on Shower Talk. Toby, you're in the United States in the America. How is everything going?
Everything's going quite well here. I'm standing out on the balcony, looking out over the sun setting over the ocean. It's a lovely day, and I'm on a special antique telephone. I have not spoken on a telephone like this before for a long time. It's got a rotary dial. And on the front of it, it tells me that the phone number for this phone is 4 digits long.
Wow. That is old. It is old. Toby, I don't know if you heard, but today's topic here on Shower Talk, the show about thinking about talking about showering, is showers without borders, this idea of the shower that doesn't differentiate itself from the rest of the bathroom. Have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, definitely. I've experienced that occasionally in fancy hotels and also Scandinavian designed houses, I've noticed. Yeah. You know, it's just like the floor is part of the shower, and there's just like a big bit of glass as a wall, and you have to keep it meticulously clean, otherwise it looks like shit.
The Scandinavian design, I think it's BS. I think this design could work. Now, I wouldn't choose it myself. We're renting, and we're stuck with what we have, and the shower is part of the bathroom, and that's just how it works. But if somebody gave me half a choice, I would say, look, put a goddamn centimeter, like lump, like a little cube that runs the shape of the shower, you know, where the doors come in. Why not differentiate it? What if someone urinates all over the floor, right? It's just going to go straight into where I stand in bare feet in the shower. What the hell? Toby, do you have any... How's your showering experience been in Manch? How's it been for the last while for you?
It's pretty good. It's actually quite enormous and quite accommodating, because it's had to be sort of like old person and disabled person accessible. So,
right.
You know, it's not quite a shower without a border. It has the little lip that you want it, but the area behind the shower curtain, it's quite large, and there are handles, there are rails that you can hang on to, and I think you could really probably bring a chair in there and sort of have a sit-down
a book. Yeah.
Somehow that seems to be kind of off to me, though.
Uh-huh.
That sounds like it's equipped for other things, Toby.
Yeah,
sounds like you shouldn't be there by yourself.
Has that crossed your mind? Doing the dirty in the old person shower, Toby? Has it crossed your mind? Yes or no?
Oh God!
But the silence that was just before that means no, it hasn't. But I am thinking about it now.
Okay. All right. So listen, next time we'll get back to you on Shower Talk with updates on did you bang your GF in the old person shower? Have you ever seen these showers
Have you ever seen
the showers with doors? It has something you open and then step inside, and there's a little seal, like a car door with a little seal. Have you seen this for people with mobility issues?
No, I haven't seen that. Yes. I've seen those sort of foldy ones that are like the toilets in airplanes, and you sort of like, you know, fold a door in and out with needing no swing space.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Huh? Like an accordion style.
Yeah, accordion style.
Yeah. Usually in sort of terrible sort of one person studio apartment kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. The type of showers where you can't actually touch your feet to wash them because there's not
enough. No, you'll end up touching your butt and your head on the disturbingly slimy walls of the shower.
All right, guys. Listen, it's been real. Thank you so much, Toby, for being a part of Shower Talk all the way from the United States of America. I wish you all the best, Chad. Do you have anything to add?
I'm just, Toby, I hope I can live up to your big shoes. Well, I will never fit into them.
I'm all ears to see how the rest of the show goes. I'm two hosts to go now, or one host to go. So it's a changing bar.
Right, it's true. All right, thank you so much for being a part of the show, and we'll talk soon. And Shower Talk out, Toby. May you never run out of hot water. Shower well.
Great to chat. Talk to you later.
All right, talk soon.
Stay wet.
Stay wet. Stay wet, bro. All right. So, okay. So, without any further delay, we are going to bring in our guest, Vavarishrova. All right. And we're going to bring her in, and we're going to bring her in right now. And we're going to see what she's been up to. Chad, are you all right with that?
I'm fine. I just don't feel so classy now that she's come in with a glass of wine.
Yeah, no, you no longer feel classy. I think you can avail of the same service if you really wanted to.
Yeah,
talk to the producer.
It's just the glass. Maybe I should have champagne.
Talk to the producer, okay? We don't have any champagne. Okay, all right. So we are back, and we are here with our guest, all the way from freezing cold Soviet Russia. This is Vavarishrova.
By way of freezing cold London.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, London, Dublin, Moscow,
Beijing.
I mean, Pam
and Bali Castle.
And yeah, Mayo, right?
Yeah.
For reals. All right, Vavara, how are you today?
Oh, couldn't be better.
All right, so So thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
Where did you wake up this morning? Were you here in Dublin?
That's a good question.
I was actually, yeah, I was, surprisingly. Normally I'm on the other side of the planet, but this morning I was well and connected to Dublin town.
All right, so you woke up, and on the other side of the planet, you mean you woke up in a severe state of disassociation, right?
I had the most amazingly bizarre dream, and it was so interesting, engaging, and like I was in the movie and I was the chief and solo actor in it, so it was very engaging and discombobulating.
Before we even bother introducing you, Vavara, can you please tell us what the dream was about, as much as you can remember?
Well, I remember quite a lot of it, so I will shorten it up. Otherwise, it will take up all my very valuable airtime. Mm-hmm, and it was basically about me being hired by some kind of gangster gang of gangster artists. Very strange. And I was trying to sell my services as an artist to them, which was really strange. And they had like a sweatshop warehouse. And eventually I managed to sell my services to them. And before long, I realized that they are kind of like soul stealers. They're going to take my soul away. Okay. And before long, I was kind of locked into that warehouse. And I realized I made a big mistake. And I lost my phone and my bag was stolen. And basically, it was all about being trapped. So, hey, you know what that is about.
Yeah. You need a casual trading license.
Maybe. No. A casual flying license. That's what I'm after.
Are you trying to become a pilot?
No. I don't want to become a pilot, not commercial pilot, but I want to be able to fly a light aircraft. That's my long life dream that I carry in my genes because my great uncle was a airplane designer. He designed the first Russian amphibious plane the 20s. Yep. And then my grandfather, he was a pilot who flew those incredible damn things. So I just have to get it out of my system as an art project next to come.
Okay, so a formal introduction is necessary. Vivara, you're an artist by trade, yeah?
Yeah.
And,
no, there isn't such a thing as artist by trade. Come on, artists don't make money. Come on. Artist is a calling. So
okay. You're an artist by calling.
By curse.
Yeah. And your most recent endeavor is out in Mayo, is that correct? You're doing an exhibition right now.
Yes, that's right. Just opened last weekend on 12th of August.
Land and Sea, it's a charcoal on canvas or paper?
Paper, yeah.
Graphite.
Yeah. Apologies. Yes, and right. You gave me a tour via video chat a few days ago. And
Chad was there. Chad was there helping. He was the perfect artist helper, another artist who knew exactly what to do. And I said to him, my God, what a relief to have another artist to help, because he knew I didn't have to tell him.
Right.
He just knew what to do.
So he helped you hang the actual physical...
Not just hang, decide what goes where and where the dark works go next to the light ones or opposite the light ones and how many. So it was very good. It was like a dynamic conversation.
Right.
And we have to mention that it was in the middle of nowhere. It was one of the furthest western coastal points of Ireland.
What a place to have an exhibition, right?
Yeah, and all the work was basically made a few years back when I was visiting from Beijing. I was living in Beijing at the time, and I was here in the summer. And I just looked out of my window and I saw the clouds and I thought, oh my God, like everything else is static. The land is static. Even the sea is relatively static, but the clouds is where it's at.
Okay. And yeah, I think I read a bit about the little, you know, explanation of your inspiration. It was about the dynamics. Actually, I very much enjoyed what I did see.
Thank you.
How does somebody start out becoming what's called, quote, an artist? You know, like how does somebody declare themselves an artist or like at this stage in your life say, you know, what do you do? I am an artist, and actually be able to stand behind that. Like, how do you get into that? Or how did you start out?
Flying, I think in my case, it's all to do with genetics. I'm a great believer that certain things just passed on. And I come from, for my sins or not sins, from three generations of artists. So my grandfather and my grandmother were trained architects. And at that time, they had to paint their buildings. They had to actually present a painting
for AutoCAD a competition.
No. And then my father and my mother were both artists. In fact, I went to the same art school as my mother in Moscow. So, you know, it is a disease that runs in the family. And I had all the ambitions to become a diplomat instead.
Oh, really?
Hence, I learned my English quite well.
Okay.
But then I was told that for a number of political and other circumstances, I could not become a diplomat in the former Soviet Union. So instead, I thought, oh, well, you know, in the end of the day, my father's been banging on that I have a talent. I might as well try it. So that's how, you know, initially I was sent to an artist's fellow friend of my parents' studio, and he was going to give me a verdict in less than a day, basically giving me like a model to draw.
I've never drawn
a model in my life.
Jesus.
But I was brought up kind
of... How old were you again? Sorry.
14.
14 years old.
At 14 in Russia, you decide. Yeah. You
know
what you're...
The binary litmus test of are you able to be an artist or not?
Yeah. I mean, they don't mess about with kind of, you know, you'll be a Sunday painter, you'll be grand girl. You know, it's like, no. You have a talent, you do it. You don't have to have... bugger off.
Right.
So, you know, I endured a test. Apparently, he called my parents and said, she totally has a talent, because what I did when I saw a model, I said, oh my God, it's like too complicated. There's so many bits to a human body and I haven't got a clue about the anatomy. But I had a charcoal that was quite like thick in my hand and I just went for it. I just really attacked that piece of paper. And I think what he saw was kind of weird fearlessness.
Uh-huh.
And that sometimes matters more than the ability to draw every muscle and every bone.
Yeah,
so effectively, you were diagnosed with having a conscience.
That's it.
And so therefore, you couldn't be a politician or a diplomat. And so
they're like,
let's just see if you can draw. And it's like, she may or may not be able to. However, she's got this bravery and intensity that could maybe take her somewhere. Yeah?
Or maybe they just decided that I'm not cut out for a day job. Who knows?
Yeah, well, there's that as well.
Yeah.
Set your own hours.
Yeah.
Learn how to draw, learn how to paint. So what was the first one? And then from there, where did you go? Did you go into formal education or?
From there, I was still in school, obviously. So I just went and to that artist's studio then every Sunday for live drawing class. And then I did endeavor to learn, you know, how the human body is constructed and built and where the muscles are connected to bones and etc. And then I kind of did the formal still life for good couple of years before I was even allowed to touch oil paints. It's like in Russia, it's very rigorous. You have to be able to be a drawer before you do anything
else. You must be a drawer before you touch oil paint.
That's it, yeah.
But it's very very formal around workshops. So when did that start?
So you know, that. So I did preparation for entry exam to the formal art school for 2 years. And then I tried my art school exam at that time, you know, weirdly, and I think now looking back wonderfully, you had to actually to compete to get into an art school. It was quite hard.
Looking back, you think this is a positive?
Oh yeah, definitely, because now you only compete to get into a business school. For example, in Ireland, you get the lowest grades and the only university you can enter is an art school. So it's the lowest common denominator. In Russia, it was like a really big achievement to get into an art school.
All right.
And, you know, now my kids say, oh, mom, you're doing MFA as an art school. Ha, 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 you know. Uh-huh. It's funny. It's not
so
serious.
They churn out the number of artists out of art schools.
Yeah.
Like, I did it, 13 years ago?
Okay. Well, I mean, how many people do you think graduate NCAD every year?
That I don't know.
Ballpark.
I don't know. Maybe 50 in one group. So it will be like just painting, drawing if they have grouping. Yeah, and then they will have design and interior and they will have textiles and ceramics, etc. So it's probably all together from fine art, I imagine, I don't know, 250. But that's totally rough estimation.
Yeah, and I made the faux pas of saying, you know, you're an artist by trade and you guys are like, by calling, right? So say all these 50 people who graduated this last semester, however it goes, from NCAA, all by calling, not by trade. Can one support oneself? And where does one draw the line? Whenever you're literally starving to death, or
I see it. Wow, this is a weird one. Yeah, I see it a vocation in the same way I have family in the church. It's something that it's not a job, but it's something that you have to do because
it's a burden. You can say it's a cross to bear, which sounds very churchy, actually, but it's like something you can't get rid of. It's like an illness.
All right.
But it's a nice illness. It's fun, you know. And you get used to being ill after a while, and that's the way you're kind of constituted.
You can't do much else.
Yeah, it's a nice form of dementia.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Okay. So you were in Russia, and did you find work there, or did you?
It was really kind of weird experience because I think I was brought up in the family. It wasn't quite dissident, but it wasn't officially like supportive of my then government. So, you know, I was brought up with alternative facts. shall I use the format?
And
the alternative facts were the true facts, whilst the facts presented on TV and radio were not. So, you know, the only way that one could get any kind of paid work as an artist, say, as an illustrator or designer, which is what my father did, whilst he painted and drew his paintings sort of into his desk, as it were, and didn't show them to many people for many years. So the only way to do that was to have a degree, and to have a degree you have to enter the art school, and to enter the art school you have to conform. So when I finally entered the art school, I had to try twice, because as I said, it was hard to get in. And the third time, lucky, I entered the art school, and then I realized that what I was bringing to them, what I had to bring, was the work I've done back 3 years ago, primarily because what I was doing at the same time was just not ever going to pass. I just going to be totally like thrown out of that school because it was expressionistic, impressionistic. It wasn't socialist realism.
Who needs anything but that?
Yeah. So basically I was told, you know, that don't bring those works. You'll just get thrown out. And so after 2 years of doing that, I realized this is so boring that I'm doing much more exciting work in other people's studios and underground, you know, occupied buildings and illegal
Soviet
studios.
Bunkers,
yeah, all kinds of places.
Missile silos.
Yeah, that, exactly. All the place, interesting places that artists have occupied. And after a while, I just thought, oh, you know, what's the point in continuing with this? And then I was invited to come over to England for the first time. And it wasn't the first time in the West. I went before.
I'm sorry, invited by whom?
Invited by my friends who were the Slavists who were studying Russian in Moscow.
Right.
And, you know, I'm kind of a fast mover. So when I moved to England, I was 21 and I already had them as a kind of backbone. And then I started meeting people in the art world.
Right.
And met my first gallery friend in London, Chelsea, and they invited me to do a print. And then one thing led to the other. So I kind of was able to create some kind of reasoning for myself and some friends network, because certainly I wasn't financially wealthy or independent to be able to afford to live in London. But just like in Russia, we say it's better to have 100 friends than 100 rubles.
Can you say that in Russian, please?
Не имей 100 рублей, а имей 100 друзей.
Oh my God, it's so true. It sounds more true in Russian though, right?
And yeah. So, you know, 100 so, friends
it's
helped.
A, like a Pittsburgh saying.
I mean, I tell you what, 100 rubles will get you nowhere. Truth be told.
Yeah, these days, sure.
So, and even in those days, it wasn't very much. So, you know, I came over with $200. I think that was the official sum we could bring. And I had to borrow and not steal, but definitely borrow from friends to even find that. But I came over to England on the train with one of the Slavist's friend, my friend Toby. And we went at that time, it was 1989. So we went through East Berlin, West Berlin and the whole caboodle. You know, we went through the most amazing borders and crossings from the east to west and on the train. And the train compartment.
It's effective. I hear a train is very similar to an elevator, in that the doors close and then you're in a different place.
Yeah, totally. When you go through so many countries, it's slower, but it's uh-huh. still the same effect. But
you take the train then from Moscow going through Belarusia through Warsaw?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And how is the change in landscape?
Well, not only changing landscape, you know how they lift the train because the tracks are different. So the tracks are wider in Siberia,
wow.
well, and the rest of Russia, as it is, you know, so different to size to Poland. Western Europe. So they literally lift. It's cheaper for them. They could never build the same corresponding track. So they lift the train carriages and they put you on the Western ones. And that's the most exciting moment, because you realize, like, if you ever were in doubt about border crossing, that was the most physical and poignant way of doing so.
It's different.
So we did that, but our compartment was weighted. It was heavy because I had probably about 100 paintings and stretches and canvas and infamous rabbit skin glue that you were looking for in mail. I had brought it with me from Moscow, and Russian oil paints. And the main reason being is because I realized no way I can afford those materials. I checked the prices. Mm. I had to bring them with me, and I had to bloody well paint whatever landscapes and portraits to sell them to then be able to kind of make a living because, you know, nobody else is going to help me.
Yeah.
And so we arrived with very many pieces of crazy art.
Yeah. And rabbit glue.
And rabbit skin glue. It stinks.
It's made with everything except rabbits.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So where's the name?
Why is it called rabbit skin glue?
I don't know why. I think they started making it with rabbits.
Originally.
But rabbits aren't stable. They break down. The
gelatin
for
rabbits. Named, it should be renamed into rabid skin glue.
Yeah, rarebit.
Rarebit.
And you know, the American football is still called the pig skin sometimes, Chad.
Yeah.
That's true. Oh. So, all right. So, okay. Fast forward. I mean, how do we get to here? Like, how do you get in Ireland? How did you leave that whole world?
We went to China. So there is a China between London and Dublin. That's a very important chapter.
Yeah. It sounds like, and I'm aware of your recent works with the Chinese. And
everything is Chinese. Yeah. Chinese
and you had the Russian ambassador, I think.
I did.
Visit your exhibition.
Yeah, I did.
Pretty crazy stuff. And we saw some of that. So you did some video work, which is a departure from the canvas and that kind of stuff. The video presentations.
You know, you should remember that the landlocked Moscovites do not know the far east extents of our own motherland. So that for me was very interesting.
It's weeks away.
Having moved to China, the first project I did was about Russia-China border.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. And so that's how the video came about, because I realized absolutely no way can I paint this or draw this, and photographing is not enough. So I took the video camera for the first time and I did my first road movie, which comprised about 40 hours of footage of various parts of the trip, the strange, the bizarre, the grotesque, and the absurd of the Russia-China border.
Mm-hmm. And can you give me an example of each of those things? I'm sorry, but it's so evocative. So like the strange, the grotesque, the bizarre, and absurd, I think. What was one example of one of these things? What was strange?
Well, I suppose strange was that it was all monochrome. So the colors were none. There was black and the white. And the black was usually either the structures or the roads or the trees. And the white was the snow. And there is very little in between. Okay. So, you know, the color is taken out of it. So most of the work is black and white. And then it has kind of the videos that I shot there. It's black and white fundamentally with some specks of red, which, of course, corresponds to Russian and Chinese flag, but also the kind of lucky color, favorite color, the dot, etc. So that was, I suppose, strange that it's a monochrome world. On my first video project and on my first big journey in China to Russia-China border, I intentionally, but also for practical reasons, never crossed onto Russia. I always remained on the Chinese side as an observer, traveling along the border to the right, to the left, but I rarely even contemplated going across.
Yeah.
And it was a psychological reason. Also, it's like a linear thing. What do you do with a border? You cross it. I think it's too predictable, too boring. And then you always have to come back. Instead, I traveled along.
To criticize Americans from here rather than going.
but also, it's like, you know, when you travel in parallel, if you take it as a metaphor. So, you know, in my video, you kind of go back and forth. So you go in parallel like Russia and China did for so many years as cultures. They never cross over. They never touch, really.
Yeah. Mm.
They go in parallel. They like each other. They don't like each other. But they do not mix. And that's the kind of metaphor about my work. That they, what I brought out of that is a message. You know, your work is supposed to have a message. So my message is that the cultures are very similar, but they're also very different. And China remained China. Russia remained Russia. They moved in parallel for a certain part of history. But they will always remain very, very different. They will never become one. So, you know, this fear about the border crossings being muddled, that they come kind of the Russians and the Chinese are aware of each other in an unpleasant way, that they take the Russians' jobs. That's all kind of nonsense, because culturally they're miles apart. And that kind of can be brought back into the discourse about European borders and how the fears are fuel that people become the same, and you know, with European Union everything becomes homogenous, and that's not true. I mean, look how easily it falls apart.
Of course.
That's just because food is so bad here. But don't worry, we will win.
And then dumplings versus stew. I mean, like, what is the quintessential Russian dish, Varvara?
Pelmeni.
Oh wow, what is that? That sounds
exciting. That's dumplings. They're small.
Dumplings, yeah. But so I mean, like the Chinese are crazy.
Of course, But do you know where they come from? Neither. They come from Mongolia. Of course, the Mongolian hordes who ruled Russia and China, the Mongolian Khans, the great Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan.
He brought his amazing dumpling recipes across borders.
Well, they brought everything with them. So, you know, the culture is
mobile.
Right across, connect via dumplings.
All right. So if you can, I know it's skipping over quite a bit. We're asking you to summarize your entire life in, you know, what, 15, 20 minutes. But could you take us now to what inspired you to do the current show? And I understand the dynamics, but the materials and the media you're using.
I think maybe it'd be more interesting to see where you think you're going to go in the next few years.
I told you, I'm going to get a flying
license.
My co-host
just undermined me.
Totally under. He's an artist who can do that.
Yeah, but it's...
free license.
He only talks about what's interesting to him.
Mm. Yeah, obviously. That's true. Well, no, I do have another question that could be interesting, because we didn't talk about...
Once his hepatitis C starts becoming symptomatic, that's the only thing he's going to talk about.
No, my Ballyglen and the art center in Ballycastle was started by a couple from Philadelphia.
Oh, my gosh.
We could bring that nicely back to Adam and being from Pennsylvania.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. And that's what kind of got me into Irish thing altogether. actually, is being invited in 1999 when you moved out of this Ireland. Yeah. You moved out, I moved in, because I was invited by the couple from Philadelphia who came here and built an art foundation. And they saw my show in West End of London and liked it. And then they invited me to come over here. And I came over, and I'm an urban person, born and bred in Moscow.
Girl.
And so I came from Moscow via London, where I've already been living for a while, and suddenly I'm in the middle of nowhere in County Mayo in the west of Ireland, which consisted, Ballycastle consisted of one street that went from uphill to downhill, and that was it. So I arrived and I saw the studio. The studio was wonderful. You were
for
in
all
it,
the single
Chad.
Ladies out there. There's plenty of unmarried men out in Ballycastle.
Yeah, well, I just...
Hot tip.
You know, absolutely, and farmers. And, you know, I was so...
If you're looking
in
for a man who can handle his sheep... You'll find one there.
I know. Well, I was
That's so charmed by it.
I know it isn't. I was so charmed by Ballycastle that I just couldn't. I couldn't give it a miss. And instead of 6 weeks, I stayed for 3 months, and then I came back every year to Ballinglen Art Foundation as a returning fellow. So it was quite a change. And when I came back from London and brought this work from my first residence in Ballycastle in the west of Ireland, and my gallery came in, a very successful West End gallery who, you know, gave me my first show. And when they looked at it, they said, what is going on? I mean, these paintings, these drawings of charcoals on canvas, like, what on earth is going on? We can't sell that. So they were quite polite in English, and they said, you know, we'll go away and we'll let you kind of settle. And maybe you were kind of kerfuffled when you went to Ballycastle. Maybe you will settle back into the nice, colorful abstractions and then see what happens. And I thought, oh, that's a proposition to be led in my artistic endeavor, which sounds very pompous, but it's true.
Right.
Or else I do what I like, which is draw and paint more seaweed and, you know, F them. And guess what I chose? hence I am here.
Okay.
As opposed to, I don't know, Sunset Boulevard.
Right. Yeah, well,
but that's okay. I'm still happy because I have a show in Ballycastle, not in Hollywood or Brooklyn Heights or whatever.
Yeah, because that opportunity has not passed. You know,
No. It's all ahead. It's all ahead.
You feel like
one
that.
Is going to live till 100.
They call it tinsel town. Tinsel is very thin. It's very fragile. It breaks apart in your fingers, and it's quite shiny. And all the glitters is not gold. If you want to visit that world, knock yourself out. But it sounds like you're kind of like interested in immersing yourself into something a bit more exploratory.
Yeah.
Than anything Hollywood or Sunset Boulevard or Hollywood Boulevard could ever offer.
I think as well, that being an artist is it's a path in its own right that one has to follow. And that's what it is. It's not a trade. It's a vocation.
I
agree.
Deep.
But it's true.
It has its own turns.
No.
You notice how the tone statement. Changed.
No, that's the thesis statement. No,
but it's true.
Accepted. It's accepted. I get it.
You know, I'm in my second part of my career, you can say, I am doing a master's degree in Goldsmith College, London. The reason being is because I want a discourse about exactly the things that matter, not about... How much money have you set aside for your first, second, or third mortgage? You know, that's a choice. It's a choice because I want to talk about things that matter to me, that interest me.
Yeah.
It's a great title for an exhibition.
Which
actually.
Is?
I'm looking to get a third mortgage.
Let's call it the Varvara Shabrova's third mortgage exhibition. What was your inspiration behind this piece? I'm fucking broke. all right, so we have some questions coming in from the audience. One quick comment. Chad, you're not an internet radio co-host. You're a country in Africa. Okay? And that's
one more. I like that.
This is for Vivara. What is your favorite subject to paint, if you could do anything?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one.
What's your favorite?
That's a hard one.
If your spirit were to paint, not your physical body, what would you paint?
Oh, it's a really hard question. Well done, the audience member, whoever you are, because it's really hard to choose because it's not the subject matter. I think it's more the intention. So the intention is then driven by whatever you're interested in at the moment, and I can only comment on what I'm interested in right now. So even though, for example, the Ballycastle show is about landscapes that dates back a few years, what I'm interested in now is, well, say my thesis in Goldsmith is about art post-trauma with a question mark, which basically poses a question whether art has got an ability to deal with, address, and potentially cure trauma. And
I
so
that's known. The answer is yes.
Yeah, the answer is yes. But I want to then, you know, because it's a thesis and because it has to be argued, not pros and cons, but actually it has to be a clinical succinct evidence. Argument as to why, and you have to give examples and lots of footnotes. It interests me to then see, you know, well, okay, so other people's art, you can argue, has cured trauma or has addressed trauma or has made people face trauma, like literally look at images that are not comfortable or difficult, and then somehow has transgressive quality. Then what about my art? And that's a very tough question to ask. Okay. And I do not have an answer to it. So can I say this is my favorite subject matter? I can't, but it's definitely a challenge. And once it's a challenge, it has a root to continue, right, and it's interesting.
Do you want to plug your show that's on right now? Could you tell the listeners?
Yeah, sure. If
you want to drive to
it's
Western
a totally realistic.
Possible.
Yeah, it's a realistic, realistic point. Yeah, that I'm going to make. Please come and visit County Mayo. I'm not from Wild Atlantic Way or Mayo Tourist Board.
You should
purely for my exhibition in Ballinglen Arts Foundation that runs until August 31st, open daily or by appointment. And the show is entitled Land and Sea. You're all welcome to join it. And do, if you cannot physically be there, do have a look at my website, which has got regular updates on the show and the visitors and the responses. And my website is VarvaraShavrova.com.
Spell that, please.
It's VarvaraShavrova.com. Or else you can visit my Facebook Varvara Shavrova artist page, which also has got updates and shots from the show.
And on Twitter at Varvara China.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think you have the web address on the Facebook event as well.
It'll all be posted. If you check out unfixedoffiletype.com, you can see all the links.
It's worth going out that way. Yeah.
You wouldn't be with hordes of tourists. That's for sure. You'll be like a lonely traveler, but it will be worth it.
Except if you have to get stitches or something from a pharmacy. No,
don't mention the stitches. Don't mention the stitches.
Wow. Layers upon layers. All right. Okay. So thank you so much for being a part of the show. Varvara, as you know, we do a little segment we like to call Pet Cemetery. And this is...
Yay!
We walk down the twisted path in the forest with
dead animals.
The knee. Deep mist down to the Stephen King Pet Cemetery. Have you seen the film Pet Cemetery?
No.
Christ.
Is it a horror film?
Yeah.
That's why I haven't seen it.
Films. I mean, artists don't need horror films.
Because scary news, you know, that's just going to scare me, man.
Yeah, well, we'll have fun a little
bit. I need to sleep after this.
But in the meantime, we like to walk down the twisted, dark kind of creepy path down towards the Pet Cemetery. And we walk down with our current guest... I'll take you by the hand. We'll walk down towards the Pet Cemetery, visit the grave of one of your lost compatriots, your buddies, and if you could just tell a little bit about the life and more importantly, the death of a friend of yours. Is that all right?
I think, though, before this, we need to explain a little something that happened last year at the party in Ballycastle.
Okay.
Do you remember? What Varvara asked us to do the day after the party?
Maybe
to dig up some bones, guys.
Oh yes, no, we totally did with the whales. There's a whole whale skeleton that you'd buried in the ground. It's crazy. So we were up. They were up there with Varvara's. Varvara's like, you know, I don't know, like mountain retreat. And then there's this whole goddamn bleached whale skeleton. I'm like, what's the deal?
She says this great Russian cure for a hangover is you dig up a whale.
And eat the fermented. And eat the fermented.
He's been buried for 2 years. Yeah, that's perfect.
That weren't happening.
Just chew a bit of a bone.
But for real, like this entire long, you know, articulated vertebrae of a huge ocean mammal. And it's crazy. Like you just bury the thing, let it decay, pull up the bones, and then you throw it as a garden ornament. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it keeps robbers away, apparently.
It was awesome. All right, so thank you for filling us in on that important and critical detail. But all right, so now we're going to go to the pet cemetery, and we're going to go there with Vivara. And all right, Vivara, thank you so much for doing the show. We're going to go to the pet cemetery. We're going to check it out, and then we'll bid you adieu, and we'll head on out. All right?
All right.
All right. I don't want to be buried.
Oh dear, pet cemetery. Well, I have a creepy story to tell because I had a cat, and it was a very distinguished cat. It actually was my father's cat. It was born and bred in Moscow. And when my father passed away, there was no better thing to do but to bring the cat to my new country of residence, which at the time was China. So the cat traveled with me, caused me a lot of trouble and a lot of money. And in China, scratched me, you know, had to be put into the quarantine, then had to be released by bribing of the officials, then lived happily for 5 years in China. And then after China, there was time to move back to Europe. So, you know, again, transportation of pets into rabies-free countries, that was quite expensive and tiresome. And eventually, the cat made it to Italy, to my cousins, and then from Italy, they had to be collected, the cat and the dog, actually, and brought back via ferry to Ireland. So, to cut the long story short, the cat, at that point, is, like, old, and he is clearly not going to live forever, so I tell my kids, as a famous grave digger, because you know the story of the whale, I like to collect animals' bones and bury them into the garden so they get cleaned up. And then I have a little cabinet in my house in Ballycastle that my children call lovingly Mummy's Cabinet of Death, which basically has a collection of skulls of birds and mice and quills, various creatures. Outside also there is a whale, as Adam mentioned, but I don't have a cat skull. So lovingly stroking my wonderful pet of 18 years of age, I said to my kids, what are we going to do with Chuka, that was his name, when he dies? I want to bury him in the garden, and then I want to dig him up in 2 years. And they thought it was totally grotesque. So, because he was alive and kicking. But then eventually he kicked the bucket because he was 19 years old and he traveled and lived in 5 countries and he was like an honorary resident. So eventually he died, and I wasn't there when he died, unfortunately, but he got buried in my back garden. So now I have a real moral dilemma because I have to vacate the premises. I have to move out. Do I dig him up and rebury him, or do I let him be? And the pet cemetery is just that little sad-looking hillock in the back of the garden that's not even mine. I'm very tempted. So, you know, I'm afraid you have to watch that space and have a wild guess what I'm going to do.
Yeah, my money's on your digging up the skeleton.
I think she's going to ask us to do it.
Yeah, you know, I've done worse.
Next party. Next worse. Party in Ballycastle.
Yeah, you had the build the wall party, and we'll have the bring up your dead party.
I did meet a taxidermist yesterday, actually. I think he's a Sligo County Councillor.
Nice.
Nice one.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to transport the dead remains of the little Pat. And that was nice. Choose your own adventure, kind of pet cemetery. So okay, all right. So thank you so much, sincerely, Vivara, for coming on the show.
It was fun.
It's been fantastic. Go and see her exhibition if you're willing to drive out to BF Nowhere, Mayo. I think it's like the westernmost point. Full stop.
No, it's in Ballycastle. It's in Ballina.
All right, yeah, down Ballina, Ballycastle. Babar, you said, I asked you via Twitter or I think Facebook Messenger or something like that, WhatsApp. Are you going to bring the exhibition to Dublin? Can we see land and sea?
Possibly, quite possibly. I will keep you well posted and well informed.
Yeah, well, hit me up on the Twitter feed and we'll be sure to retweet it. Anybody listening can...
For sure.
Or follow you on the website.
Yeah, definitely.
What would be the easiest way again to keep in
I think keep track? It's the website and the Facebook page, which is Varvara Shavrova Artist.
Mm-hmm.
Or my name again, VarvaraShavrova.com, is to follow what I'm doing. Next exhibition is Land and Sea is a possibility, but a firm exhibition is actually going to be in St. Petersburg. That wow. requires even further travel to a St. Petersburg festival called Pro Arte 14, which brings contemporary artists into a traditional museum.
Okay.
So that would be the weaving work, the autobiographical or family archive work. And then I'm going to visit the Museum of Arctica and Antarctica, where my great uncle's plane, amphibious plane, is hanging. And so that is going to start that chapter.
Wow. Well, Varvara Shavrova, past, present, future, Chad, sorry, closing thoughts?
Well, I was just going to, when is that show on?
23rd of September till the 22nd of October.
In St. Petersburg.
In St. Petersburg, yeah.
But the Volga won't be frozen then, no?
Oh, not Volga, Neva, come on.
Neva.
Oh, yeah, no. It will be beautiful. It will be golden leaves and all. And you're welcome to follow that again on my website or look up Pro Arte St. Petersburg.
All right. Okay, thank you so much for being on the show, sincerely. Thank you for bringing the trip out. All right, so, yeah. All right, okay, we're going to do a bit more show. We've got scary news. We've got to go for a walk. We have to talk to Andrea, and then we're going to wrap it up. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
That is fine.
Okay, and we'll be right back with more Infix. Thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll be back in just a moment. That was something.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun, and I enjoyed it. That was Varvara Shavrova, and it was a hell of a guest, Chad. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for, you had so much to add to the interview, and I appreciate that. I sincerely do.
No. I'm just being me.
You're in the art world. She's in the art world, and you helped drive that interview, and I really do appreciate it. Sometimes we do the show. We've been doing the show since 2006, Chad.
2006?
You are the third co-host.
I'm the third co-host.
Yes.
There's only been three.
Fourth. You're the fourth co-host, yeah.
And this is, one of those things that I it's going to be a lifetime achievement to be on this show.
Yeah, your CV, put it on your resume. All right. But sometimes, sitting here behind the desk and sitting at the abandoned bar, it gets a little like I have to stretch my legs. I got to get out there. I got to go for a walk sometimes, Chad.
Oh, yeah. So, it's important to get out there.
Yeah, and I went to Donostia, Chad. This is northern Basque country, Spain. But these people specifically that I spoke to were interested in bringing prisoners that are being held anywhere outside of Basque country to prisons in the Basque country. Now, whether they're released or retained or detained is to be determined. But they just think they should be held in Basque country. And you mentioned a tiny bit of insight that you heard about French mistreating Basque prisoners, right?
No. It was the Spanish. There was a French undercover officer who infiltrated the ETA, and he was captured by the Spaniards.
Right.
And they tortured him. And they didn't believe that he was a French undercover officer until the French government asked for him back when he went missing.
All right, yeah. Well, then they believed him, yeah.
But he got 6 months of Spanish hospitality.
Yeah, the tapas, paella.
Oh, yeah, pichos.
The whole deal.
Pichos, yeah. They're the ones with the little sticks.
Oh, man, pinchos. Yeah. Interestingly enough, pinchos, these are these little like bread concoctions, right? So it's like a slice of French baguette, effectively. And they've got a little piece of sausage or some olives or some cheese, goat's cheese, peppers, sometimes little meats and things like this. And where they originated from was that in bars, you would leave your beer and there'd be flies. So they put a piece of bread on top of your beer. When you ordered a beer, you get a piece of bread on top of it. And then somebody garnished it with an olive, right? And then the next bar says, we'll throw some ham and an olive. And then the war began. And then, I think better and better.
I've heard from no, she's not Basque. She's Spanish from Bilbao. That Pichos is...
No, that's Basque for sure.
Well, no, but she...
Oh, she's identifies
not
as Spanish.
Ethnically Basque.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, but she says that Pichos is anything with a
toothpick.
A toothpick in it, basically.
All right. So here we're going to go for a walk now, and we're going to check it out. Chad, I thought about
please
you because...
Don't murder me for that.
This guy says, he asks me where I'm from eventually, and I tell him Pittsburgh, and he goes, Industrial. So I thought
yeah.
about you. I thought about you. So here
Coal
we go.
Mining.
Go for a walk. This is my walk in Donostia, and check it out.
I'm going for a walk.
All right, so we're here in Donostia. This is Adam, and we are doing the Going for a Walk segment. And I just came across a march, and you guys are demonstrating about political prisoners, is it? Or
this is about the help to Basque prisoners who living in different prison of Spanish country.
Okay, and so they're not in Basque. They're somewhere else in Spain.
Yes. And now there are 307 prisoner.
Okay.
Now.
And are they being held prisoner because of their political beliefs or yes. for other crimes or
in different prison?
Sure, it's
not,
individuals.
Not only in the Spanish prison.
Right.
There are some of them. There are in French prison.
Okay.
Here, see. This is a mother of one one Basque prisoner, but he is in near to Paris.
Near Paris, okay, yes. In France.
Yes.
So some of the demonstrators actually have family members who are held prisoner right now.
Because we want to free
right,
all
course.
Prisoners.
Right.
We think that is enough. It's enough, and we think that they free.
Right.
But... the Spanish government don't like it.
Right.
But in the Basque government say that it's enough and they come from in the Basque country prison.
Right, okay.
And we think that it's better than Spanish prison because some prison, they are 1,000 kilometers from this country.
Right, okay. And I mean, how does change happen, do you think? I mean, we can walk in the street, and that's important, you know, to show your message and show that you are together and you really care. How does change actually happen? Do you appeal to the governor or the legislators? Or?
With the Spanish government, because there is Pepe, Partido Popular, is the government, is the in the government of Spain. They don't like... any change about this
sure.
question.
Yes.
And then there are a prison with a different power
right.
or different European
right.
community say that they have been free.
Right, okay.
And we say the same.
Sure. Thank you so much for your time. Sorry, what's your name?
My name is Jesus.
Jesus.
And my surname.
That's amazing.
Yes.
I met Jesus here in Basque.
There isn't Jesus. Jesus only is a good.
Si, si.
But here yeah. Jesus is Oyosu.
Yeah.
Normal.
Okay. A normal name, I understand.
And my surname is Arrizabalaga.
Oh, wow. So it's Jesus Arrizabalaga.
Si, yes.
Listen, I got to run and find
where
my
are you wife. From?
America.
But America.
Pittsburgh, Northeast. Yeah? Northeast. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island.
I know. I mean,
okay.
Industrial place.
It used to be. It's not anymore at all.
No.
Not at all. Listen, okay. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay,
thank you so much.
Now,
yeah, with the help. Where did we start? I was back here, right?
We come in here.
See, si, si. No, my wife and my friend have no idea where I went. I just ran away.
Okay.
Good luck.
I'm going for a walk.
That's the kind of shit I get up to, Chad. I just go out there and I meet the populace.
You engage with the public in foreign countries, in different languages, and you're so American about them, you force them to speak your language.
Look, what am I supposed to do? Speak Basque? Like, they don't even speak fucking Spanish. Spanish, man. They don't speak Spanish. They don't speak Spanish. I say sí, and they say what? I say, ¿cómo? And they say, no. I don't understand. No comprehendo. No comprehende. I'm going to call... Chad, we're going to call Andrea Loyan right now. We're going to try to do 90 seconds with Andrea Loyan. This is a segment in which we get full-board Andrea Loyan just for 90 seconds of our time.
I start to identify with her. I start to become her. That's for the 90 seconds, and then you just cut it.
She's visiting in October, so you can become her all you'd like. If she lets you.
There wasn't...
There's no free rides. Andrea.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Adam and Chad. We're calling you from Unfixed. How are you tonight?
Good evening.
I'm great. How are you guys?
Chad, I think, was thinking about speaking in French a tiny bit because he wants to show off. Chad, do you want to say some things in French?
Ce soir, ça va, c'est tranquille. Je pense que je vais rentrer bientôt pour dormir. Voilà.
I'm moist, and I'm not even sure why. I think I may have
eaten. Right? I mean, there's nothing that gets an American girl faster than a foreign language that sounds romantic.
Yeah. Andrea, ich liebe dich, und du und ich für immer.
German just doesn't do it.
We are calling, of course, to do 90 seconds with Andrea Loyan, in the segment, as you know, in which we just give you a topic, and you just go full board. You give us 90 seconds of what we've called mind business.
And yes.
It's just everything you've got, unfiltered.
Oh, I've been dying to see this live.
He needs it. And so, Andrea, if you're okay with it, we're just going to go ahead and launch right into it. And we were thinking and brainstorming a tiny bit about topics. And the only thing we could think of so far is caffeine. How do you feel about that? Do you have a lot to say? Do you think things?
Yes, because I'm on caffeine.
Oh, you're high right now. Okay, great. 90 seconds. We're going to just go for it. And I can't wait to see what comes out of Andrea Loyan's top hole, as I call it. Yeah. All right, Andrea, I'm going to play your theme song, and when I say go, you go. Is that all right?
Okay.
All right, we're going with caffeine. Do your dance, do your dance, do your dance. Quick, mama, come on, baby, tell me what's the word of wait up. Everybody say, when you hear the call, you got to get it under white word up.
Okay, here's the thing about caffeine that, like, not really everyone understands about it, which is that here in the United States, caffeine's basically in the water. Like, they say it's fluoride, but really it's caffeine. And the thing about it is, like, we're already caffeinated enough, so what we need are coffee in the morning. It's double caffeine. Sometimes triple caffeine. Like, sometimes if you go for, like, a double espresso, you're really getting three times the caffeine that, like, everybody else is getting. So, like, everyone who gets all smug, like, oh, I don't drink coffee, like, I work with one of those people, they're like, I don't drink coffee, I'm just gonna go get a chai tea. Oh, here's the thing, you're already caffeinated, buddy. Like, we all know the secret, like, the water's caffeinated in this country. Like, you're not that much more special than we are. So, like, whenever people want to be all like, oh, you have to wean yourself off caffeine, that's impossible. It's in the water. Meanwhile, everybody's teeth are rotting out of their heads because there should be fluoride in the water instead, and no one's brushing their teeth properly, nor are they going to the dentist and flossing. So you have this country full of people who are over-caffeinated, staying up all night, not getting enough sleep, their teeth are falling out of their heads, they're freaking out, they're going to the therapist, and the therapist is like, you just need to meditate. Like, that's not going to really solve your problem. What the problem is you just need to, like, clean the water again. But, like, we're having that problem right now in Pittsburgh because, like, our water's full of lead. The reason why you try to put on those airs and act real cool, but you got to
realize that you're acting like those. Give us music. Alrighty. So, Andrea Loyan, thank you so much for your time. Chad, what did you think about that? You got into Pittsburgh in industrial ways, so I bet you're a bit chuffed.
Oh yeah, I'm scared to drink the water over there.
As you should be, as you should be. All right, okay, thank you so much, Andrea, and all right. So, and 90 seconds with Andrea Loyan, everybody. So, all right. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, we are going to keep the show rolling, and we're going to move on to a little something that that may be a little bit, I don't know, alarming. Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you now to a segment that we like to refer to as
The Scary News.
It's true. Chad, you've been gearing up for this for hours, right?
Oh, I've been trying to avoid this one. This is really scary. It's kind of like the 1980s.
Pregnant California woman finds huge rattlesnake in backyard, August 11th.
Wait, was that the scary?
A pregnant California woman said she and her unborn child were likely to evade injury or worse when she found a massive rattlesnake in her yard. Sarah something or other said she was in the backyard of her house in the Mira Mesa neighborhood of San Diego on Wednesday afternoon when she spotted the venomous serpent hiding in a bush. It was about as tall as I am, and it was pretty terrifying, Guthals told KGTV. Guthals said she contacted the San Diego County Department of Animal Services, and the animal control officer who captured the rattlesnake told her it was the biggest one he had seen all year. When he picked it up, it was about 5 feet long, she said. Guthals said she had been trying to make her backyard safer for the baby, which is due in a few months. I want to make my backyard safer for me baby. But Wednesday's encounter made her uneasy. Now I'm even more terrified. She said, now I'm even more terrified. Because like seconds before that, she was terrified by default. And now seeing a 5 foot long snake, she's more terrified.
Maybe she should move to Ireland.
Yeah, they have no snakes.
Exactly.
Legendarily.
Legendarily.
The Department of Animal Services said they fielded 921 calls about rattlesnakes, up from 725 at the same time last year. California is not the only place where unusual rattlesnake activity has been reported recently, Chad. A couple walking the beach on South Carolina's Hilton Head Island captured video earlier this month of a large rattlesnake that slithered out of the ocean and explored the beach. Experts confirmed the beach-going reptile was an eastern diamondback rattlesnake. They suggested the serpent had been swimming when it was carried away by the tide and ended up on the island beach.
A diamondback rattlesnake?
A diamondback.
Oh, God. No, that's a cool name.
Oh, you've never heard of this. Yeah, this is totally common back in the New World, Chad.
Back in the new world.
We're keeping it real with livestock. Overturned truck sends pigs spilling into Kentucky highway. Traffic on a highway in Kentucky was delayed for several hours after a truck carrying hundreds of pigs overturned. The crash occurred at 9:30 in the morning on Wednesday when the semi-truck carrying 150 pigs headed to a Swift plant and Louisville overturned to the northbound ramp of an interstate. Some of the pigs were killed in the impact, while others were sent wandering along the interstate. You know, it's a hurt feeling, and I hurt too, LMPD Traffic Unit Investigator Donnie Smith told Wave. I don't like it. Swift plant officials arrived at the scene and euthanized some of the injured pigs and loaded the rest of the pigs onto another truck headed for the plant. What's worse? Like, seriously, like, choose a... Like, what do you got? Live or die, man. Who gives a shit?
Do it or die in the street or in a factory?
Yeah, like, euthanize or, you know.
Bring me a priest first.
The driver of the truck was taken to a local hospital after sustaining minor injuries in the crash.
After being euthanized.
Authorities said no other vehicles needed to be euthanized and or were involved in the crash, and speed was not a factor, noting the truck's load shifted and caused it to overturn. The livestock, like, they all, they're like, everyone to the left. And yeah, nightmares unfolded.
I like the way they blamed the pigs.
That's what they said, too. It was totally the pig's fault. It wasn't, yeah. Like, the guy totally knew the driver and all that, you know.
You know, he paid
him. So we were winding down the scary news. Chad, you made it, dude.
Okay. And the rattlesnake, I just think that compared to the stuff I had to put up with in Brazil, that's nothing.
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 How about this one? Grieving family spotted a decaying foot lying atop their grandfather's casket in New Jersey Cemetery. The nightmarish incident took place at Mount Holiness Memorial Park in New Jersey in the U.S. Dr. Sandra Butler told the New York Daily News, "This is a very traumatizing situation. First dealing with losing my father, and then this afoot. I couldn't even look at it. It was too much, and no one said anything. It was like business as usual for them, the grave diggers. They just dumped the dirt in the plot like it was normal, like it was nothing." Mr. Butler, who suffered a fatal stroke at a Brooklyn nursing home, made his final journey at the Robinson and Brown Funeral Home in Bedford-Stuyvesant on Friday.
Name and shame.
He left behind a large family, including 4 children, 9 grandchildren, 6 great-grandchildren, including Sandra and her brother, Alonzo.
Four children is a big family.
There's a lot of kids.
Is it?
The 50-year-old bus driver said, "We all looked down and we were looking at what apparently was a human foot and a leg wrapped in plastic with cloth wrapped around it, sticking out on top of my father's casket." One of the mourners quickly took a mobile phone picture. They claimed cemetery workers quickly shoveled dirt over the foot. They heard it was a leg on the casket and they didn't even try to investigate it, Alonzo added.
Was this your man's leg that was in the casket, or no?
It was from a neighboring grave.
Oh, that came out. Oh, yeah.
Relatives told the paper that one worker even accidentally dropped his phone and a pack of cigarettes into the open grave. The items had to be fished out with a rake.
No, you don't fish with a rake. I'm sorry. Sandra's
brother,
true.
Alonzo, said he is angry, and the workers didn't try to investigate the leg, and the family revealed they may now pursue legal action.
Well, maybe they should have bought a bigger plot so they wouldn't have other people's legs. You know, it's like a cemetery. It's like a concert. You have your place, but
it's like a mosh pit.
Yeah, like leg room. It's the same thing happens on Ryanair flights. You know, you pay for a seat, but leg room.
It's true.
It's a fight.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is true.
And then the other thing, maybe Al Gore was right. Look at plastics. It just doesn't break down.
No. Yeah, because Al Gore figured that one out. All right, so okay. Listen, that was a hell of a show. Thank you so much for Varvara Shafrova, the Russian artist turned. She's like a British Isles a little bit invested, right?
Yeah, well, she's told me that because of her travels, she feels more Russian now than she did 15 years ago.
Interesting statement. You know. Yeah. What about you? I mean, just real quick insight. Like, you know, you're Irish, and you've gone to the continent, and like, do you feel less or more Irish?
Oh well, I've come to understand that I'm obsessed with eating. So, definitely French, unfortunately, on that side.
Who the hell's brought up food, Chad?
Well, it's the thing. It's the thing about what regulates your day. What's the thing that defines you? I didn't actually eat before I came this evening.
Oh, right, you're hungry.
Yeah. Well, I had a packet of crisps. I don't eat too many crisps, and it is a nice pleasure to come back to Ireland for crisps.
We have gnocchi. We've got some different pâtés.
Pâtés.
Yeah, saucisson.
I meant to bring some saucisson, actually. I did have some.
All right. Thank you so much to everybody who can hear the sound of my voice right now, who's listening to live, who's listening to the podcast version. Chad, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Thank you to Varvara Shafrova for being a part of the show. Chad, anything to say? Parting words?
This was a brilliant experience. I'm so glad I could have been here. And hopefully we'll do it again.
And you could have been. But your meds kicked in and you were elsewhere. So yeah, thanks, and for reals, this is the August show, and we'll see you soon. We'll do a September show, I think, and then we'll also do the Halloween Spooktacular. It's going to be back, hopefully, with Toby Hallium. Yeah, it's already creepy. Thank you so much for tuning into the show, and we will talk to you soon. This is Jensen out,
and from Chad, good night.